Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Words appear. MGM presents a CinemaScope production. Now, a locomotive, a dozen cars long, slices across a barren desert plain dotted with scrub brush. Titles appear. Spencer Tracy as John McCready and Robert Ryan as Reno Smith. In Bad Day at Black Rock. Co-starring Anne Francis, Dean Jagger, Walter Brennan, John Erickson, Ernest Borgnine, Lee Marvin, Russell Collins, and Walter Sand. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Dan Davis and Kate Roosevelt. Read by Margot Stage. For more about description, call DVS at 1-800-333-1203. The engine races past jagged black boulders scattered by the side of the tracks. Titles continue. Screenplay by Millard Kaufman. Adaptation by Don McGuire. Based on a story by Howard Breslin. Director of Photography, William C. Mellor, ASC. Music by Andre Previn. Looming mountains ring the desert plain as the locomotive speeds across a ridge. More titles. Produced by Dor Shari. Directed by John Sturgis. Now, outside a small depot, a man sits facing the tracks with his chair reclined against the wooden frame of the building and his brown fedora hat pulled low over his eyes. The man gets to his feet and gapes at the oncoming train.
Stopping.
In the office of a filling station, a young blonde woman with a white scarf tied around her neck stares out the window. She gets up from her desk and walks to the door of the garage, staring at the approaching train. Men step out of nearby storefronts and gape as the train gradually slows. The railroad track slices across the barren valley, crossing a dirt road lined with a half dozen dilapidated small buildings. From the front porches of the businesses near the depot, men in cowboy hats and dungarees lean forward in their chairs, gawking at the train. As the train stops, a conductor steps off, followed by a lone passenger, a middle-aged man in a black hat and suit, who keeps his left fist stuffed in his jacket pocket. The conductor eyes the handful of buildings nearby.
Man, they look woebegone and far away.
Oh, I'll only be here 24 hours.
In a place like this, it could be a lifetime.
The conductor signals for the train to leave.
Good luck, Mr. McCready.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
The conductor hops aboard and McCready watches the train pull away. The man in the brown fedora hat walks up to him.
You for Black Rock?
That's right.
There must be some mistake. I'm Hastings, a telegraph agent. Nobody told me the train was stopping.
They didn't?
No, I just told you they didn't. And they ought to. What I want to know is why didn't they?
Maybe they didn't think it was important.
Important? It's the first time a streamliner stopped here in 4 years. You being met? You visiting folks or something? I mean, what do you want?
I want to go to a place called Adobe Flat. Are there any cabs available?
Adobe Flat?
Yeah.
No cabs.
Hotel open?
Hastings stares.
Is the hotel open?
He nods.
Thank you.
As McCready heads off, carrying his suitcase, Hastings hurries inside. McCready walks slowly down a sandy path behind the depot toward the town's only street. From the front porch of a cafe, four men gawk at him as he passes, heading down the wooden sidewalk bordering the dusty, unpaved street. At the hotel, an older man in a white hat sits on the front porch, staring. Next to him, two cowboys, one burly and one thin, slowly get up from their chairs, their eyes locked on McCready. Inside, the hotel clerk peers out the front door at the approaching stranger. Now at the depot, Hastings speaks into the phone.
Pete, now listen. A man just got off the train and asked for Adobe Flat.
Now in front of the hotel.
Afternoon.
The cowboys eye McCready.
Anything I can do for you?
You run this hotel?
No.
MacReady goes in. The thin cowboy turns to his friend.
Fine, Smith.
The burly man hurries off. Inside, MacReady stops at the front desk. The thin cowboy takes a seat in the lobby and looks on as the hotel clerk arrives.
Oh, like a room.
We're all filled up.
Have you any idea where I could...
This is 1945, mister. There's been a war on.
Ended a couple of months ago, didn't it?
Yeah. The OPA lingers on. You don't know about the OPA?
No, you tell me.
Well, for establishments with less than 50 rooms... Hotel keeper got a report regularly about tenants and registration. There are penalties imposed.
The clerk tries to close the guest ledger. MacReady forces it open and looks through it.
You seem to have lots of vacancies.
Well, as I said, they're every one of them locked up. For summer showrooms. For feed salesmen, cattle buyers. The rest they're spoken for. Rented to cowboys, ranch hands for when they come into town. They pay by the month. We provide for their every wish and comfort. Do you understand?
No, not exactly. But while I'm pondering it, why don't you get a room ready for me? Gotta be good, huh?
MacReady takes a key off the wall behind the desk and signs the ledger.
I'd like to have a bath. Where is it?
At the head of the stairs.
Thank you.
Picking up his suitcase, MacReady heads for the stairs. He stops and glances at the thin man staring at him.
I don't know why you're so interested, but the name is MacReady. It's all in the ledger.
You look like you need a hand.
MacReady pauses and turns around to face the lanky cowboy. With a wry glance, MacReady continues up the stairs. The cowboy gets to his feet and cockily saunters across the room. He starts upstairs, then stops to look down at the desk clerk.
John J. MacReady, Los Angeles.
I want to know everything he does, Pete. Phone calls, mail.
In the meantime?
In the meantime, I crowd him a little. See he's got any iron in his blood.
The cowboy struts up the stairs. Later, the stocky, gray-haired MacReady stands in front of the bathroom mirror, dressed in a bathrobe. His brow furrowed, he picks up his shaving kit. MacReady slowly opens the bathroom door and steps out into the hallway. Trudging slowly, he moves down the hall to his room. Entering his room, MacReady halts as he sees the lanky cowboy lounging on the bed, puffing a cigarette with his back propped up against the pillow. MacReady steps back to check the door, then calmly re-enters. The cowboy stares straight ahead.
Guess maybe you're in the wrong room.
You think so? What else you got on your mind?
Why, nothing else, I guess.
If you had half a mind, boy, you would have paid attention to what Pete downstairs said. He said this room's here is for us cowboys, for our every wish and comfort.
And this one is yours, I guess.
When I'm in town. And I'm in town as any fool can see. You can see that, can't you, boy?
Yes, I guess so. Would you mind if I sort of got my things together and found another room?
Not at all. But if you really wanted this room, we could maybe settle your claim without all this talk. I believe a man's nothing unless he stands up for what's rightfully his. What do you think?
I guess so.
You guess so. But you still ain't claiming this room.
No, I guess not.
You all the time guessing, ain't you, boy? Don't you know anything?
Well, I know that ever since I got off the train, everybody's been needling me. Why?
The thin cowboy takes a long drag on a cigarette.
I guess I rightfully don't know.
Now, in the hotel lobby, Pete, the desk clerk, and four other men wait, staring off.
He walks light for a big man, doesn't he?
Who?
You know who. What do you think, Doc?
Why ask me? He's no salesman, that's sure. Unless he's peddling dynamite.
Maybe he's a cop or something.
Did you ever see a cop with a stiff arm?
Maybe his arm's all right. Maybe he's just hanging on to something tight in his pocket.
Like what, a pistol? A stick of TNT so he can blow up the whole mangy, miserable town? Why are you so interested, Sam? If I was that interested, I'd ask him.
MacReady comes down the stairs.
Hey, wait a minute. Any cigarettes?
Pete goes to his post and tosses a pack of cigarettes onto the front desk.
How long you staying?
Where, in my new room? I'm staying.
I mean in the hotel.
24 hours, why?
Just asking.
Why, you gonna have a convention?
MacReady pulls a cigarette out of the pack with his teeth.
I was just asking.
Doc steps forward.
Where could I get a car?
I don't know.
Well, now, let's put it this way. Supposing I had a car and I wanted some gas, where would I go?
But you don't have a car.
You might try the garage down at the end of the street.
Thank you.
Puffing on his cigarette, MacReady turns and walks out. On the street, a big wood-paneled car pulls up with a six-point buck strapped to its hood. As MacReady tries to walk past the car, the passenger door opens and the burly cowboy steps out, blocking his path. MacReady goes around to the other side.
Here we go again.
The driver, a lean 50-ish man wearing a red hunting cap, climbs out and looks at MacReady. MacReady strides past him down the dusty street, his head held high. The driver heads into the hotel lobby, followed by the burly cowboy. The driver walks past Doc and the others to the front desk, where Pete shows him the guest ledger.
This is all I know about him, Mr. Smith.
Smith frowns wryly, then buttons his shirt collar. He turns to the window, where the burly cowboy stares out at the street.
Sit down, Cody.
I was sitting
down.
The other cowboy saunters downstairs.
Real cool guy.
Doesn't push easy, huh?
Well, that's it. That's just it. He pushes too easy. Now, maybe we ought
to... What do you want, Doc?
Nothing. I was just wondering what all you people are worrying about. Not that I have the slightest idea.
You wonder too much and you talk too much. It's a bad parley, Doc.
I hold no truck with silence. I've got nothing to hide.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing, man. It's just that you worry about the stranger only if you look at him from a certain aspect.
How do you look at him, Doc?
With the innocence of a fresh-laid egg.
Keep it up, Doc. Make a bad joke to be funny. Someday I'll have Coley wash your mouth out of the lie.
Coley, the burly cowboy, grins as Smith gazes out the window. Now, MacReady walks briskly to the filling station, his left hand tucked in his jacket pocket. He enters the open garage bay and looks around inside. At the hotel, Doc gazes out the lobby's picture window. As MacReady trudges down the dirt street back toward the hotel, another man joins Doc. They stare out, their gazes following MacReady as he passes, his confident stride reflected in the glass window. Now, Hastings comes running out of the depot, down the sandy path onto the street. Approaching MacReady, he slows to a walk. As MacReady passes him, Hastings breaks into a sprint. MacReady turns and stares as Hastings trots towards the hotel.
I called the Circle T. He ain't got business there, not if they don't know him. Right, Mr. Smith?
Smith grins thoughtfully.
Send a wire to Nick Candy, Los Angeles. Tell him to find out everything he can about John J. MacReady.
What was that?
Nick Candy, Los Angeles. Tell him I want to know fast. Sign my name.
Who was that?
Nick Gandy, G-A-N-D-I, Blake Hotel. You got the rest of it?
Yes, sir.
All right, sign my name.
Hastings hurries out.
Well, who's Gandy?
Private detective. I drive to L.A. now, man.
This guy Gandy, you get us the dope, huh?
Get us anything you want for $20 a day in expenses. Don't get too nervous too fast, Hector.
Just I don't like it.
Maybe he's just passing through.
Yeah, don't bet on him. He can be in only trouble.
Hector, you're jumpy as a stall horse.
Well, you ought to see him, talk to him.
About what? What'll I talk to him about? The birds, the bees, the crops, the weather? You tried it. What'd it get you?
It's just I thought it.
You just thought.
Well, what do we do?
What'll you do? You'll wait. Just like Pete here. That right, Pete? And that's all you'll do. And while you wait, I'll talk to him.
Hey, what do you know? Mr. McCready seems to be heading for the jail.
Smith and the others get to their feet and move to the window. Doc looks in at them from out on the sidewalk.
Now, what do you suppose he'd want to talk to the sheriff about?
His hands held behind his back, Doc smirks, then turns and walks away. Now, as McCready strides toward a small cinderblock jailhouse, Smith glares. McCready enters the building and looks around. Finding no one behind a desk, he walks over to a jail cell. Inside the cell, he finds a man sleeping with the door open and the keys in the lock. The man gets to his feet as McCready starts to shut the door.
Hold it, friend. Hold
the balding man wears a star-shaped badge on his shirt.
I ain't hankering to get locked in my own jail.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were a guest.
Well, as it happens, I'm the host.
The sheriff looks McCready up and down. Smirking, McCready follows him back into the front room where the sheriff slides open a desk drawer and takes out a bottle.
Snort?
Nothing.
I don't blame you. It's awful.
The sheriff raises the bottle and takes three big gulps. McCready eyes the bottle as the sheriff sits down.
What are you looking at?
You tell me.
Well, I ain't always this bad. It was just that last night me and my pal, Doc Feely, we did a little celebrating.
All over you celebrating?
Well, you name it. What do you want?
My name is McCready. I came in on the Streamliner.
You what?
I say I came in on the Streamliner.
Well, you ain't from around here. Are you up Phoenix way? Tucson? Mesa? You ain't selling cattle, nor seed corn, nothing like that.
No. All I want from you is a little information. I have to go to a place called Adobe Flat.
The sheriff's eyes widen.
This ain't no information bureau.
You know, there's one thing about Black Rock. Everybody is polite. That makes for a very gracious living.
Well, nobody asked you here.
How do you know?
What about Adobe Flat?
I'm looking for a man named Kamoko.
The sheriff knocks over his bottle, and McCready catches it.
Almost a disaster.
Yeah, fate worse than death. You move fast for a crip.
McCready's smile fades.
For a big man.
How about Kamoko?
If there are no further questions.
The men glare at one another for a moment, then McCready turns and leaves. The sheriff nervously runs his hand over his bald head. Now, Smith puffs a cigarette as he gazes out the window from the hotel lobby. Outside, townspeople on the sidewalk stare at McCready as he paces back toward the hotel. Smirking, Smith takes a seat in a chair on the front porch of the hotel. He stands as McCready walks by.
McCready.
That's the first pleasant word I've heard since I got here.
My name is Smith. I own the Three Bar Ranch.
Smith walks beside him.
I want to apologize for some of the people in town.
Act like they're sitting on a keg.
A keg? Of what?
I don't know. Diamonds? Gunpowder?
Oh, it's nothing like that. We're suspicious of strangers, is all. Hangover from the old days, the old West.
I thought the tradition of the old West was hospitality.
I'm trying to be hospitable, Mr. McCready. You going to be around long?
Could be.
How'd you like to go hunting tomorrow? I'd be proud to have you as my guest.
Thanks, I'm afraid I can't.
At the filling station.
Because of your arm, I suppose. I knew a man lost his arm once in a threshing accident. He used to hunt all the time. He was quite a man. If there's anything I can do while you're around.
Oh, no. I was just looking for it. No, it doesn't matter.
You're looking for what, Mr. McCready?
I was looking for a man named Kamoko.
Kamoko, I remember him. Japanese farmer. Never had a chance.
Oh?
Got here in 41, just before Pearl Harbor. 3 months later, they shipped him off to a relocation center. Tough.
Oh. You don't happen to remember which one they sent him to, do you?
Who knows? Why don't you try writing him? Glad to help you out.
No, I'm afraid you'd be wasting your time. I've already written, but they don't forward my letters. They keep sending them back.
Oh, they do.
The blonde woman with the white scarf drives up in a Jeep. She pulls up at a gas pump and shuts off the engine. Picking up a gas can from the back, she climbs out of the Jeep. MacReady steps toward her.
Need any help?
I can manage.
Well, I need a little help. I'd like to rent your Jeep.
That'll be $2 an hour, gas extra, $10 for my time.
Why don't you ask him where he wants to go? He wants to go to Adobe Flat.
Is the road marked well?
He hands her money.
About 6-7 miles down.
Fine, fine. Then I won't need your time.
I thought you might need a little help.
Oh, no,
MacReady gets in the Jeep.
I get along fine, thank you.
Liz, do you have a license to hire cars? You might get into trouble.
I won't say a word to the sheriff.
MacReady smiles at Liz and drives away. Frowning, Smith walks over to Liz.
You shouldn't have done that.
That'd be better if you went out there and got done with it. What can he find out? I wouldn't do anything to hurt you, Reno. You know that.
He motions to her. She holds out MacReady's money and he grabs it.
This is liable to be the hardest $10 you ever earned in your life.
Smith crumples the bills, stuffs them into her hand, and then storms off. Liz watches him, her mouth hanging open. Finally, she pulls off her cap and scarf and picks up her gas can. Later, the sheriff lies on a bunk in the jail cell. He turns to look at the front door as he sits up. Smith enters the office, pauses to glance at the bottle on the desk, then saunters over to the sheriff's cell.
What do you want?
He asked about Kamoko. Do you think he'll kick up a storm?
A storm? What about?
Oh, I don't know. All I know that I don't want no more trouble around here. Never again trouble.
You don't know anything about Kamoka, now, do you?
I do not. That's the point.
The point is, what you don't know won't hurt you.
Maybe there's something that I ought to know. Maybe there's something that I ought to ask you before the stranger comes back here and starts breathing down my neck.
Jim, you're just a lost ball in the high weeds. I told you a long time ago, nothing happened for you to worry about.
Thing is, I do worry. Maybe I ain't much else, but I'm sure a worrier. And I'm still the law.
Tim takes a seat at his desk and puts his bottle in a drawer.
And do your job, Tim.
What is my job, Mr. Smith? Maybe I'd better find out before MacReady does it for me.
MacReady will do nothing. And neither will you, Tim.
Suppose I decide to try.
That might be dangerous. Tim, you got the body of a hippo, but the brain of a rabbit. Now, don't overtax it.
The sheriff nervously crumples a magazine, then looks away from Smith's intense stare.
Yes, Mr. Smith.
Smith grins and slaps him on the back.
Tim, buy you a cup of coffee?
Tim picks up his cowboy hat and puts it on, avoiding Smith's eyes. Now, at the depot, Hastings sits at the telegraph machine. Picking up a sheet of paper, he runs out the door and alongside the train tracks to the crossroad, where Tim trudges along behind Smith. Hastings hands the yellow sheet of paper to Smith. The others look on as Smith reads the message, his brow furrowed. Coley, Pete, and Hector walk up.
From L.A.?
Yeah, from that private detective.
What does he say? Who is this guy anyway?
Never heard of him, that's what he says. He checked and there's no John J. MacReady. No listing, no record, no information, nothing.
Where does that leave us? I'll tell you where it leaves us. I'm sick and...
Smith silences Coley with an icy glare. Smith stands with his arms folded, gazing down at the ground. Tim turns and walks away, leaving the others gathered in a circle around Smith, waiting. With his thumbs tucked in his belt loops, Smith takes a few steps away from the crossroad, down the railroad track, then stops. Coley joins him.
Now, Coley?
I think MacReady's a nothing, a nobody.
Is he?
So there's nothing to worry about.
Isn't there? You got brains, you have.
What can he find out that Kamoko...
Coley glances back at the others, then at Smith.
Suppose he finds out.
And nobody like MacReady can raise a pretty big stink. The point is, who'd miss a nobody like MacReady if he just, say, disappeared? Who, Coley?
Pete watches, his arms folded.
Coley?
Why don't we wait?
Wait for what?
I mean, maybe he won't find anything. Maybe he'll just go away.
Not MacReady. I know those MAME guys. Their minds get twisted. They put on hair shirts and act like martyrs. All of them are do-gooders, freaks, troublemakers.
Let's wait and see. There's no danger yet.
No danger, he says. This guy's like a carrier of smallpox. Since he's arrived, this town has a fever, an infection, and it's spreading. Hastings in a sick sweat, running around shooting off his face. Doc getting snotty with me for the first time in 4 years. And Liz, your sister, acts like a fool.
She's only a kid.
Kid? She must have strained every muscle in her head to get so stupid renting him a Jeep. Tim the rumdum, suddenly decides he's got to act like a sheriff. And he says there's no danger.
He points to Pete, then turns away.
Of course, you want to take the chance?
Smith looks at the others. Coley meets his gaze.
Not me.
All right, then.
You're mighty quick to kill. He's not an animal.
Well, listen to little Spitfire.
He glares at Pete.
You miserable little toad. I'm saving your neck. If I don't, who will?
Tim? All right.
Doc, your sister with the rocks in her head. There's one thing about your sister. She's got twice the guts you have. You're only fit for running away.
And it's too late for that. He's in this, and he ain't running no place.
Smith smirks at Coley.
All right, then.
Grinning, Coley follows Smith as he strides down the road toward the hotel. The others join them, except for Hastings. Heading in the opposite direction, Doc passes Smith and his men. He stops at the crossroads to eye Hastings, then continues on. Now at the jail, Tim sits at his desk, studying his face in a mirror. As Doc enters, Tim puts the mirror away and rolls a cigarette.
Let Smith find himself a new boy. I can't take it another day. But if you're a sheriff, they gotta respect you. Otherwise, you can't do your job. They just laugh.
I don't laugh, Tim.
Well, why don't you?
Cut it out, Tim.
You should.
In the name of well-adjusted manhood, get a hold of yourself. Snap out of it. You're gonna have a complex or something.
4 years ago, if I'd have done my job, if I'd have checked up and found out what happened. But I didn't. It was just like Smith figured.
Well, what did you find out? They told you a story. You had to believe it.
Would you believe it? Huh?
I don't know. I live a quiet, contemplative life.
Me, I didn't even try to find out. Don't you understand? You know, when you wear this badge of the law, and when somebody does something against the law, then you're supposed to do something about it. Me, I did nothing. That's what's eating me. What kind of prescription you got for that?
He lights his cigarette.
I don't know. I haven't found one for myself. But there's one thing, Tim, don't quit.
Why not?
Because maybe this fella MacReady's got the prescription.
With a determined nod, Doc leaves. Tim watches through the window as Doc walks away. Now, MacReady drives the Jeep down a dirt road through a desert valley with large mountains looming in the distance. Scrub brush dots the sandy valley floor. MacReady drives past giant boulders and piles of stones, a small stream of dust flying up behind the Jeep. The road leads through an opening in a broken-down barbed wire fence, then to a clearing surrounded by rock outcroppings. MacReady slows and stops in the clearing, where more broken-down fencing surrounds the burned-out foundation of a house. A smoke-blackened stone chimney rises above the house's charred remains. Nearby, an abandoned well sits beneath a windmill tower. MacReady gets out of the Jeep and walks over to the house's burned-out skeleton, his left fist in his pocket and his right arm held behind his back. MacReady observes the wrecked home, then turns his back to it, squinting as he slowly steps away, his eyes trained on the ground. He stops and stands over a clump of wildflowers growing in the desert sand. MacReady bends down and picks a small white flower and eyes it for a moment, still bent at the waist. He plucks a yellow flower and holds the tiny buds in his right hand. He peers at them for a moment, then crumples them. MacReady looks up at the 20-foot-tall windmill tower. The mill's turbine blades spin counterclockwise in the strong wind. MacReady glances at the flowers in his hand, then puts them in his pocket as he steps toward the tower. With his foot, he lifts the lid off the well at the base of the tower and pushes it out of the way. He peers down into the well for a moment, then picks up a rock, tosses it in, and waits. With a last glance at the burned-out house, MacReady slowly walks back to the Jeep. Placing his right hand on the wheel, he pulls himself into the driver's seat. High above him, Coley stands on top of a big rock outcropping, watching through field glasses. Lowering his binoculars, Coley hurries down from the rocks as MacReady speeds away. On the ground, Coley runs to his car, a blue-gray sedan, and gets inside. He starts the engine and rumbles away. Meanwhile, MacReady cruises down the winding dirt road. Coley speeds around a rock outcropping, kicking up a cloud of dust as he races through the sand onto the road behind MacReady's Jeep. Coley's sedan trails 50 yards behind, steadily gaining ground as the vehicles head down a long straightaway. His right hand on the wheel, MacReady keeps his eyes trained on the road as Coley closes in behind him. Frowning, MacReady turns and looks behind him, steering one-handed. Coley grins as he picks up speed. Coley races up close, swerving on and off the road as he stays tight to the back bumper of the Jeep. MacReady speeds past more huge rock formations with Coley in pursuit. They enter a stretch of road bordered on the right by a deep ravine. Coley's sedan shoots forward, banging into the back bumper of the Jeep. MacReady swings the wheel wildly, trying to stay on the road. Coley rams him again, grinning and laughing. MacReady's head snaps back as Coley crashes into the Jeep again. The sedan veers off to the left, banking off a hillside, then back down onto the road, nudging the back of the Jeep. Coley grins maniacally, his eyes wide. On a curve, Coley rams MacReady once more, sending the Jeep rocketing down the ravine. MacReady keeps his hand on the wheel, guiding the Jeep safely down the hillside to the bottom of the ravine, where it slowly rolls to a stop. On the road, Coley stops his sedan. He gets out and peers down at MacReady. Seeing MacReady get out of the Jeep, Coley returns to his own vehicle. Later, MacReady sits behind the wheel of the Jeep, gritting his teeth as he drives down the road. His suit and fedora hat are covered with dust. Now in town, Coley, Hector, and Smith relax on the front porch of the hotel, facing the street. MacReady pulls up and parks the Jeep behind Coley's dusty sedan. The men watch as he slowly climbs out of the vehicle and heads toward them. Coley stands by the front door, casually chewing a hayseed as MacReady approaches.
Well, if it's not MacReady, the world's champion road hog.
Yeah, it's a small world.
But such an unfriendly one. Why'd you want to crowd me off the road?
I'm sorry if I incurred your displeasure.
Look what you did to my car.
The sedan's paint is chipped and the grill is broken.
Well, anything I could do to make it up.
You ought to be more careful, man. All that one-arm driving.
I'd be glad to pay for the damages.
It's a threat to life and limb.
Fortunately, no one was hurt.
You could get yourself killed that way. Nosing all over the countryside.
Yeah, I guess that's the danger, all right.
That's pretty smart of you. How long you intend to keep it up?
pulling out right now.
Coley turns and grins as MacReady goes into the hotel. Smith nods, and Hector gets up and walks away.
Still expecting that convention?
What?
If you're expecting any extra cowboys, my room is available.
Are you checking out?
Any trains through here tonight?
Tomorrow morning, the Streamliner.
I know about that.
Smith and Coley enter.
Milk train? Freights?
Tomorrow, after the Streamliner.
Buses?
Closest stop is Sam City, 32 miles away. You're in such a hurry, you should have never got off here.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
MacReady taps the desk with his fist as he turns to go. Later, he trudges down the road to the filling station. He walks past the gas pumps and through the open bay into the garage. MacReady slowly paces over to Liz's Jeep. Standing by the driver's side door, he looks down at the dashboard, then walks away, frowning. He casually steps through the door of the garage's office and searches the desk. Liz walks up behind him.
You're looking for the keys to the Jeep. They're not there.
Where would you suggest I look?
The Jeep's not for rent.
Why, it was just a few hours ago.
Things change.
He walks over to a sink in the corner of the garage.
Sure do. And Smith is the kid who changes them, isn't he? You mind if I use this?
Now, go ahead.
MacReady turns the faucet, then rinses his right hand in the water. In the office, Liz taps a pencil and exhales deeply. MacReady walks up behind her, wiping his face with a damp paper towel.
What's wrong with this town of yours, Miss Worth?
Nothing's wrong with this town, Mr. MacReady. None of your concern.
Why is everybody so concerned about me, then?
Am I concerned?
No, you're not concerned, but...
But what?
Well, I have a feeling you're a little bit too unconcerned. You're so unconcerned you won't even rent me a Jeep.
I don't want a taxi service. I don't have a license.
Too bad. Everybody in this town isn't as scrupulously devoted to law and order as you are.
I don't want to get involved.
Involved in what?
Whatever you're up to. Whatever happens, I've got to go on living in this town. These people are my neighbors, my friends.
All of them?
This is my town, Mr. MacReady, like it or not.
Well, if you don't like it, why do you stick around?
My brother, Pete, he'd never leave.
Did it ever occur to you that you might leave without him? You look like a pretty independent young lady. Your brother seems to me...
Weak? I know. That's why I couldn't leave him.
What did your brother do?
What do you care? What do you care about Black Rock?
I don't care anything about Black Rock. Only it just seems to me that there aren't many towns like this in America. But one town like it is enough. And because I think something kind of bad happened here, Miss Worth, something they can't quite seem to find a handle to.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I know this much. The rule of law has left here and the guerrillas have taken over.
Yeah, and you just tried to steal the key to my Jeep.
Well, I figured that was the only way I could get it. Was I wrong, Miss Worth?
She gets up and brushes past him. Hurrying over to the Jeep, Liz climbs into the driver's seat and starts the engine.
Was I wrong, Miss Worth?
She glares at him, shoves the car into gear, then wheels out of the garage and down the dusty road. MacReady glances down, then walks out of the garage. Squinting in the sunlight, he exhales and sits on a bench facing the gas pumps. Slouched, he pushes his hat back from his forehead. As he reaches for his handkerchief, Smith's station wagon drives up. MacReady pauses, then wipes his upper lip. Smith gets out. He ambles around the back of the car to the pump. Casually eyeing MacReady, he guides the nozzle to his gas tank. MacReady dabs at his collar line, his face turned away. His gaze travels toward the pumps. Smith tilts his chin.
MacReady, I'd like to ask you a few questions while you're around.
I'm around, all right. I guess probably you've heard that Miss Worth is no longer in the car rental business.
Good. I wouldn't want to see that girl get into trouble.
Wouldn't you?
What with rental permits? Gas rationing, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I certainly admire your sturdy sense of responsibility.
It's just that girl has a future.
Let's talk about my future.
You think you have the time?
I don't seem to be going anywhere.
Smiling to himself, MacReady loosens his tie. Smith finishes, then leans on the pump.
I hear you handle Jeep real well.
Well, yes, I do have a way with Jeep, certain familiarity.
I think I understand. You're an Army man.
He gestures to MacReady's left arm.
Where'd you get it?
Italy.
That's tough. I tried to enlist myself there, but those rats bombed Pearl Harbor.
What stopped you?
Physical. They wouldn't take me. Morning after Pearl, I was the first man in line of Marine recruiting in Sand City. They wouldn't take me.
Tough.
What do you do in Los Angeles, Mr. MacReady?
I'm retired. Well, you might say I was forced in retirement.
Smith paces in front of him, his thumbs hooked over his belt.
What were you looking for in Adobe Flat?
Like I told you, I was looking for a fella named Komoko. And like you told me, he wasn't there.
Smith laughs.
What's so funny?
Nothing. Just I don't believe you. I believe a man as big as what he's seeking. I believe you're a big man, Mr. MacReady.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
Why would a man like you be looking for a lousy Jap farmer?
Oh, you can't tell me. I'm not so big.
No, yes, you are. I believe a man is as big as what'll make him mad. Nobody around here seems big enough to get you mad.
What makes you mad, Mr. Smith?
Me? Nothing.
Ah, you're a pretty big man yourself. And yet the Japanese make you mad, don't they?
Well, that's different. After that sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, Bataan.
Komoko made you mad.
The same thing. Loyal Japanese Americans, that's a laugh. They're all mad, Doc. What about Corregidor, the death march?
What did Komoko have to do with Corregidor?
He was a Jap, wasn't he? Look, Mr. MacReady, there's a law in this county against shooting dogs. But when I see a mad dog, I don't wait for him to bite me. I swear you're beginning to make me mad.
All strangers do.
Well, they don't. Not all of them. Some do when they come around snooping.
Snooping for what?
I don't know. Outsiders coming in looking for something.
Looking for what?
I don't know. Somebody's always looking for something in this part of the West. To the historian, it's the Old West. To the book writer, it's the Wild West. To the businessman, it's the undeveloped West. They say we're all poor and backward, and I guess we are. We don't even have enough water. But to us, this place is our West, and I wish they'd leave us alone.
Leave you alone to do what?
I don't know what you mean.
Smith paces away. Watching him, MacReady chews his thumbnail.
What happened to Komoko?
He went away, I told you. Shortly after he left, some kids went out there. They got fooling around and burned his place down. That's how it was. You know how kids are.
MacReady bows his head as he laughs.
So funny.
Nothing. It's just that I don't believe you any more than I believed you about the letters.
You don't seem to believe anything I say.
Oh, yes, I believe you about what you say about the businessmen being interested in Adobe Flat.
Why?
Well, I would think they would be interested. There'd be some historian in all that land lying fallow. You know, it could be used for some purpose, like maybe a graveyard.
His gaze lifts to Smith, who tenses.
There's something buried up there. Your wildflowers? That means a grave. I suppose you knew that. I saw a lot of it, you know, overseas. Figured it wasn't a human grave because it wasn't marked. Kind of a mystery, isn't it?
Kind of. Maybe you can figure it out.
Maybe.
Why don't you give it a whirl? Might help you pass the time for a while.
MacReady stands, considering him.
Well, I got other things to do. I'm not interested.
He walks away. Smith stands with his arms crossed, then quickly gets into the station wagon. MacReady approaches a weathered storefront. He pauses, reading the words on the dusty windows. Veterinary, mortician, T.R. Vili, Jr. From an alley, Hector watches him. MacReady lets himself in, then stands for a moment, glancing around the empty office. He steps across the office. In a cluttered treatment room, Doc looks up from a chair.
Hi.
Hello?
Pull up a chair.
Did I use your phone?
Yeah, help yourself. You're one of the few people who's been back here I can say that to.
Doc gets up. In the office, MacReady struggles with a phone book.
It's 424.
What's 424?
Well, if I get you pegged, and I think I have, you're calling the state police. But if I was you, and I'm purely glad I'm not, I'd look it up myself. I wouldn't trust anybody around here, including me.
He returns to his chair. MacReady leans toward the phone.
424, please.
Pete's at the switchboard.
424? Lines are all busy.
He pulls a wire. In Doc's office, MacReady frowns. Slowly, he replaces the earpiece, then turns to Doc.
Don't tell me. I know. Lines are all busy. Be busy all day.
He leans back, dabbing his neck with a handkerchief. MacReady steps into the treatment room, his eyes on Doc, who grins at him. He takes a seat.
Mind not looking at me like that?
Like what?
Like a potential customer.
Everybody is. And I get them coming and going. First, I sell them a piece of land. Do you think they farm it? They do not. They dig for gold. They rip off the topsoil of 10 winding hills, then sprint in here all fog-heaved with excitement, lugging nuggets. Big, bright, and shiny. Is it gold? It is not. Do they quit? They do not. Then they decide to farm. Farm in a country so dry that you have to prime a man before he can spit. Before you can say, Fat Sam, they're stall stranded and starving. They become weevil-brained and butt-sprung. So, I bury him. But why bore you with my triumphs?
I got a problem of my own.
You sure have. They're gonna kid you with no hard feelings.
And you're gonna sit there and let them do it?
Don't get waspish with me, mister.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I feel for you, but I'm consumed with apathy. Why should I mix in?
I don't know. Maybe to save a life.
Yeah, I get enough trouble saving my own. Look, I try to live right. I drink my milk every day, but mostly I try to mind my own business, which is something I advise you to do.
A little late for that.
Oh, no. You can still get out of town. But you better get out like a whisper.
How?
I've got a sort of a limousine at your disposal.
What is it?
Doc motions to a door and gets up. MacReady follows him out back. With a quick glance toward the front, Doc steps across a narrow dirt yard to a boxy car covered by canvas. He draws back the cloth to reveal a black hearse wagon with silver lanterns at its doors and side panels carved with drapery and columns. MacReady steps around to the driver's side. As he settles in, Doc carefully shuts the door. Behind the wheel, MacReady grimaces. Doc fidgets, eyeing the road. He taps MacReady's shoulder.
Must be something wrong.
He folds back the wagon's hood and peers at the engine. Hector steps into the shadow of the carport.
Could be the wire.
The other men slowly look up. Hector stands, one hand on his hip, smoking a cigarette. He tosses it aside and strolls over to the engine.
Yeah, it's the wire. Now, wasn't that a good guess?
Maybe it can be fixed.
Well, easy. Except maybe if this wire was busted or something.
Doc leans in close.
Do the nice little things, like keep your big fat nose out of my business.
Hector lunges toward the engine. He rips out a fistful of wires. He tosses them aside.
Yeah, it was a wire.
He strides off. MacReady watches, his jaw clenched. He blinks, then wipes his brow with the back of one hand. Doc steps to the driver's window.
I'm sorry, but you gotta admit I tried.
And for that, I thank you.
How much time do you think I've got before they,
Well, you got at least till dark. We'd be afraid to see each other's faces.
Well, thanks, Doc. I can't say that it's been charming.
Where are you going?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going on foot.
Oh, that's no good. You stray 10 yards off the main street and you'll be stone cold dead. That's the situation in a nut.
Maybe
what?
MacReady considers for a moment, then gets out.
I'll see you later, Doc.
Doc stands with his hands in his pockets, watching him go. He nods quickly. Later, MacReady walks on the railroad tracks toward the town's small boarded-up depot. He steps onto the platform. Inside the telegraph window, Hastings sits at a desk. Smiling tightly, MacReady reaches through and takes out a clipboard. He begins to write. Hastings watches anxiously.
Lemonade?
Yes, thank you.
It's hot as Billy be darned.
MacReady writes, State Police, Sand City. Please wire or phone me, R.E. Urgent and Dangerous Situation. John J. MacReady.
Don't you like lemonade?
You ever thought much about it?
He passes the clipboard back through.
You notifying the State Police?
That's what it says.
You sure you don't want some lemonade? It don't have the muzzle velocity of some other drinks drunk around here, but it's good for what ails you.
What ails you, Mr. Hastings?
Me?
Why are you so upset about this wire?
Me?
Are you afraid, Mr. Hastings?
Mr. MacReady, I'm just a good neighbor.
DeSmith, you are. What about the Kamoko?
I never seen Kamoko in my life, honest.
All right. Then you'll send that message and give me the answer, won't you?
Yes, sir.
MacReady pays and walks away, tucking his good hand in his pants pocket. In the window, Hastings gingerly picks up MacReady's crumpled bill. Now in the bar and grill, a few men sit at tables. MacReady enters. Straddling a bar stool, he sits at the empty lunch counter in front of Sam. Sam straightens.
What do you have?
What do you got?
Chili and beans.
Anything else?
Chili without beans.
MacReady chuckles.
If you don't like the flavor, that's what they made ketchup for.
All right, I'll have it. A cup of coffee.
Okay.
MacReady watches Sam dish the food. Behind them, Smith and Coley stroll in. Smith turns to a pinball machine. Coley smirks at MacReady.
You still around? I thought you didn't like this place.
MacReady conceals a wince.
You mean going to or coming from?
Staying put.
No comment.
No comment, he says. No comment, and all the time he's got my stool.
MacReady's smile fades. He glances at Coley. As Sam sets down the ketchup, MacReady picks up his spoon and bowl. Keeping his back to Coley, he moves down the counter. Smiling, Coley takes the vacated stool. Sam watches them, then sets down the coffee. He moves the ketchup back in front of MacReady. Behind them, Hector sits watching. Coley spins on his stool.
This stool ain't comfortable.
I was afraid of that.
I think I'd like the one you're on.
Smith glances over.
He's as changeable as a prairie fire.
They all watch MacReady. He smiles, then faces Coley.
Suppose you tell me what to say.
Coley turns back to the counter. His burly arms resting on the countertop, he chews a toothpick and eyes MacReady. As MacReady lifts his spoon over his chili, Coley leans over and dumps ketchup into the bowl.
I hope that ain't too much.
As he spoons out the ketchup, MacReady glances at Smith.
Your friend's a very argumentative fellow.
Sort of unpredictable, too. Got a temper like a rattlesnake.
That's me all over. I'm half horse, half alligator. You mess with me and I'll kick a lung out of you. What do you think of that?
No comment.
You know, talking to you is like pulling teeth. You wear me out. You're a yellow-bellied Japlin, am I right or wrong?
You're not only wrong, you're wrong at the top of your voice.
Coley stands.
You don't like my voice?
MacReady looks over the burly man's shoulder.
I think your friend is trying to start trouble.
Why ever would he want to do that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he thinks that if he needles me enough, I might crack. I might even fight back. And then either he or your other ape sitting over there could beat me to death and cop a plea of self-defense.
I don't think that'll be necessary. You're so scared now, you're probably drowning your own sweat.
Ah, before that happens. Couldn't I pick a fight with you if I tied one hand behind me?
With a deep breath, MacReady pushes his bowl away, then stands. His back turned to the others, he lays a coin on the counter. As he walks past, Coley grabs his bad arm and yanks him around. MacReady clenches his jaw.
If I tied both hands...
MacReady karate chops his neck. Coley stumbles back. Hector glances to Smith, who shakes his head slightly. MacReady stands motionless, his good arm at his side. His gaze darts between the two men, then back to Coley. Coley catches his breath, then lunges. MacReady karate chops his gut, the back of his neck, then knees him in the nose. Coley slams into the wall. One hand cups his face, then drops away. Coley looks up from his bloody hand. Eyes bulging, he lunges forward again. MacReady lands two quick chops on his back. Coley crashes through the door. The other men stare. Smith stands to one side. Outside, Coley lies sprawled in the dirt. As MacReady stands watching from the cafe, Coley struggles to his feet. He stumbles back to the doorway and leans on the doorframe. Weakly, he hauls back for another punch. MacReady catches his wrist and flips him. He lies still. As Sam hurries out, MacReady glances quickly at Smith behind the pinball machine. MacReady reaches into Coley's pocket and takes out a switchblade. He opens it and steps slowly towards Smith.
Wouldn't it have been easier to wait until I turned my back? Are there too many witnesses present?
You're still in trouble.
You're in trouble. Whatever happens, you're sunk.
You got things a bit twisted.
You kill Kamoko Smith, and sooner or later you're going to go up for it. Not because you killed him, because I think in a town like this you can get away with it. But because you didn't have guts enough to do it alone, you put your trust in guys like this and Hector here. Not the most dependable of God's creatures. And one of these days they're going to catch on that you're playing for a sap. And then what are you going to do? Peel them off one by one? In the meantime, one of them's going to crack, and when they do, you're going to go down. But hard. Because they got something on you, Smith. Something to use when the going gets tough.
He tosses him the knife.
And it's getting tougher every minute.
Doc hurries in, Sam behind him. Head down, MacReady brushes past them and out the door. Doc looks at Coley.
Man, oh man.
Later in the hotel lobby, Hector plays a slot machine beside the front desk as Pete lays out a game of solitaire. Smith strides in. Sitting beside the stairs, Tim, the sheriff, timidly cups his hands to his cheeks. Nearby, Sam barely looks up. Smith looks to Hector, who glances upstairs, then reloads the slot machine. Smith glances up. Biting his cheek thoughtfully, he eases his body into a reading chair facing the foot of the stairs, then unfolds a newspaper. On the landing, MacReady appears carrying his suitcase. He pauses, looking below into the lobby, then continues down. His jaw tight, he approaches the front desk.
Anything come for me?
Nothing.
Telegram, nothing?
Nothing.
As MacReady takes a seat beside Smith, Doc ambles in.
Yes, you're interested. Coley will live. I'm truly sorry to say.
Your friend's pretty tough.
Yeah, he's wicked. He defends himself when he's attacked.
Doc stands behind MacReady and lays a hand on his chair.
You want to sit down and let time run out?
Waiting for an answer from the state cops.
Send it through Hastings. Just don't expect an answer, if that's the way you send it.
Hastings hurries in. He hands a telegram to Smith. MacReady snatches it.
I guess that's probably for me.
Hastings nervously licks his lips. MacReady unfolds the yellow paper. It's his own telegram, just as he submitted it. He turns to Hastings.
Where's my answer?
You expect an answer from a wire that was never sent? Oh, what's so funny?
I just had a thought.
A thought that is dazzling in its purity. You're in a lot of trouble. You gave my message to Smith, didn't you?
Why, you little wart? That's a federal offense.
You're in this deep, too. Like I say, it's getting tougher and tougher. Maybe you better do something about this, Sheriff.
Tim glances at Doc, then rises from his chair. He squares his shoulders.
I reckon that's right, Mr. Smith. You're not supposed to...
Don't be a jerk, Tim.
Divulging information? There's a law that says you...
Tim! You're pathetic.
Well, maybe so, but... I'm still sheriff.
That's the point. You're not sheriff anymore. You're so pathetic, you just lost a job.
Smith rips the badge from Tim's shirt. He walks to Hector.
Okay, Sheriff.
He pins it to Hector's shirt.
Take over.
You can't do that.
I can't. Well, I put him in the job, and now I'm taking him out.
Hector rips up the telegram.
Now, do you want to register a complaint, boy? To register a complaint, you got to have evidence, boy. You got evidence? You got a big mouth, boy. Making accusations, disturbing the peace. We got a law in this county protecting us and folks from big mouth like you. I'd hate to have...
Hector.
The others look at Smith. Hector pulls back, rolling his shoulders, then saunters to the door behind Smith. Hastings hurries after them. MacReady raises one eyebrow, his eyes on the door. Sam follows the others. Doc drops down onto the couch. Behind the desk, Pete glares at them. MacReady opens his suitcase and, motioning to Doc, takes out a liquor bottle. Tim sits slumped in his chair, his boots off. Doc gets up. With a nod, he passes the bottle to Tim.
Never mind, Tim. We're not licked yet.
Ain't we? I am.
There comes a time, Tim, when a man has just got to do something.
He grabs the bottle back and takes a swig himself.
Not me. I'm useless and I know it.
No man is useless so long as he's got a friend. I'm your friend, Tim.
Well, then why don't you let me alone?
Because he's going to need you before the night's over. And all the useful men are on the other side.
Let me alone, I tell you.
I can't let you alone. I can't let myself alone. Don't you understand that? 4 years ago, something terrible happened here. We did nothing about it. Nothing. The whole town fell into a sort of settled melancholy, and all the people in it closed their eyes and held their tongues and failed the test with a whimper. And now something terrible's going to happen again. And in a way, we're lucky, because we've been given a second chance.
I got such a headache, I'm bewildered. I hurt all over.
Yeah, pain is bewildering, I know. I was bewildered when I came here, full of self-pity. But your friend Smith tried to kill me. It's strange how a man will cling to the earth when he feels he isn't going to see it again.
There's a lot of difference between clinging to it and crawling on the earth. Are you going to stand by and watch forever?
Tim stares back. He starts to put on his boots.
I ain't gonna watch. And I ain't gonna get into it either. I'm getting out.
Frowning, MacReady lowers his gaze. Tim starts for the door.
I'm sorry, Mr. MacReady.
Doc stares after him.
You'll be smart to get out too, Doc.
Doc faces Pete.
There's too many smart guys around here. I'm glad I'm a dummy.
Yeah, you're a troublesome dummy. You're liable to end up on your own slab.
I expect to be in a lot more trouble before I die.
Go home, Doc. He's all washed up.
You think so?
The bottle in hand, MacReady strides toward Pete.
I was washed up when I got off that train.
You shouldn't have got off.
I had to. I had one last duty to perform before I resigned from the human race.
I thought you were going to Los Angeles. That hotbed of pomp and vanity. Is that what you call resigning from the human race?
Good jumping off place for South America, the islands.
Why?
I don't know. I guess I was just looking for some place to get lost.
Why do you want to get lost?
Because I was afraid I couldn't function any longer.
He eyes Pete.
Luckily, your friend Smith changed my mind.
Sure, you're a man of action. You know, I know what your trouble is, son. You'd like me to die quickly, wouldn't you, without wasting too much of your time? Or quietly, so I won't embarrass you too much, or even thankfully, so your memory of the occasion won't be too unpleasant.
Pete snatches up the bottle.
My memories are so pleasant as it is. It's gonna take an awful lot of whiskey to wash out your guts.
Pete hesitates.
Go on, swill it. What is there left for you to do? You're as dead as Kamoko, and you don't know it.
Take it easy now, MacReady. Sit down.
Sit down. Why don't you tell me to kneel down and beg his pardon for bringing up an unpleasant subject?
You don't have to remind me. I've never forgotten.
Well, now, isn't that noble of you? You haven't forgotten, and you're ashamed. That's really noble of you. I suppose 4 years from now, you'll be sitting around here telling people you haven't forgotten me either. That's real progress. In the meantime, I'll be as dead as a... Why don't you tell me what happened?
He turns away from Pete in disgust.
Yeah, what happened?
Why did you come here, Mr. MacReady?
MacReady considers them shrewdly.
Did Kamoko have any other family besides his son, Joe?
Son? Nobody around here ever knew he had a son.
Yes, he had a son. He's dead, too. He's buried in Italy.
I asked you before, why did you come here?
Why, this Kamoko boy died trying to save my life. They gave him a medal. I came here to give it to his old man. I figured the least I could do was give him one day out of my life.
Doc slams the desk.
Well, are you going to tell him if I got it?
Pete's eyes dart.
I'll tell him. Smith owned Dobie Flat. He leased it to Kamoka. He figured he'd cheated him because you got to have water to raise anything. There never was any water in Dobie Flat. Kamoka dug a well. He must have gone down 60 feet.
We got plenty of water. I made Smith pretty sore. He didn't like Japs anyway. Day after Pearl Harbor, Smith went to Sand City.
I got turned down. Tried to enlist.
Well, when he got back, he was pretty sore. Around 10 o'clock, we all started drinking.
10 in the morning?
Yeah. Smith, Coley, Sam, Hector, and me. We're all drunk. Patriotic drunk. We wanted to go out to scare the Jap a little, have a little fun. Well, when we got there, he heard us coming, and he locked the door. And then Smith started a fire. And the Jap, he came running out. His clothes were all burning. And then Smith shot him. I didn't even know he had a gun.
And you got scared and buried him and kept your mouth shut, hmm?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and have your drink now. You're going to need it.
With a grim nod to Pete, MacReady returns to his chair. Pete stands with his jaw clenched. Arts into the back office to the telephone switchboard. Sitting on the edge of a chair, he plugs in a wire and lifts the earpiece. Anxiously, he licks his lips.
Hold this, Pete. Now listen, I'm getting MacReady out of town. I would call the police, but all the outside lines are cut. Well, let them try. I might as well be dead.
The others listen.
Yeah, I told them everything. Look, will you never mind about that? I'm asking you because I need your help. You'd be saving two lives, Liz. MacReady's and mine, if that means anything to you. All right. Now, here's what I want you to do. Wait till it's dark.
Evening. Hector steps out onto the hotel front porch. Standing half in shadow, he twirls his pistol, then aims, practicing his draw. One hand on his hip, he tries to twirl the gun into his holster and misses. He puts the gun away. He sits in a chair, tilts it all the way back to the wall, and drapes one arm on the windowsill. Glancing back into the well-lit lobby, he settles in. Inside, Pete gets up from an easy chair. Exchanging a look with Doc, he takes up a relaxed pose, leaning on the front desk, facing the porch. On the porch, Hector takes a drag of a cigarette. He stands, swinging his arms loosely, then ambles off into the dark. Inside, Pete tenses. Keeping his eyes on the door, he starts across the lobby toward a back hallway. Doc pulls a heavy stick from between the couch cushions and joins him. They take a last look at the front porch, then head to the back. Outside, Hector stands at the edge of the desert, looking out. In a window, Pete pulls back a shade to peer out at Hector below. Hector finishes his cigarette, then strolls over to a post. He turns, looking into the evening. Pete appears in a door behind him.
Hector!
Huh?
I've been looking for you. Come here.
Hector ambles toward him. Inside, Doc hides in a shadowy broom closet, clutching the heavy stick. Pete shuts the door behind Hector, then starts to hurry past.
What do you want?
MacReady, he went up to bed.
So? You want me to tuck him in?
No, I thought maybe you wanted to tell Smith.
Smith don't want to be disturbed. He'll be here at midnight, he said.
Doc spots a fire hose.
Why are you so nervous?
Doc sets down the stick.
What do you mean? I'm nervous.
You got a match?
No, I got some in the lobby.
Hector stops him. Feeling Pete's shirt pocket, he pulls out a pack of matches. Eyes trained on Pete, he lights a match. Behind him, Doc steps from hiding, wielding the hose. He whacks Hector in the face with the nozzle. Hector falls to the ground. Pete rushes into the lobby. With a glance upstairs, he reaches over the front desk and presses a buzzer. Upstairs, MacReady moves along the landing. He steps quickly down the stairs. Pete waits at the hall entrance. MacReady strides past toward the back. In the shadowy hallway, Doc watches Hector. MacReady quickly steps through. Passing around Hector's sprawled, lanky body, he opens the door. Doc throws down the hose. Outside, MacReady steps past Doc's hearse and makes his way to the Jeep. Liz sits in the driver's seat. MacReady gets in. In a cloud of dust, they drive off. In the hall, Pete bends and picks up Hector's pistol. As Doc watches, Pete pensively spins the revolver's cylinder. Now in the desert. The Jeep speeds past sagebrush and craggy rocks. In the car.
What did you do to get Pete to change his mind? Beat him up?
No muscle.
Not with brains either. He's a pushover for a muscle man.
Beginning to think it runs in the family.
Well, I sure like to have seen you tangle with Reno Smith.
He didn't happen to be there when I left. Maybe I will yet.
MacReady looks around in confusion as they pass a large boulder. They pull into a dark clearing near Kamoko's homestead and come to a stop.
What's this?
Need water.
A light shines on them. They both scramble out. Smith fires from a ledge. MacReady takes cover behind the Jeep. Liz stands in the open.
Smitty? Smitty?
Liz, you fool. If he gets me, he's got to get you.
Smitty?
I'm here, honey. Head for the car.
So long, MacReady.
She runs toward the ledge, into the beam of Smith's headlights, then stops.
Just a few more steps, honey.
Get him. Get him now.
First things first, honey.
Help me up, Smitty.
You're gonna help me, Liz. I still need your help.
I did everything you said.
You two started out in a car. And that's the way you're gonna end up. Over a cliff, burning. Blame MacReady for that. He said I had too many witnesses.
Why me? Why start with me?
I gotta start with somebody.
She turns and runs. Liz jerks forward, tumbles in the dirt, then lies still. Smith aims at the Jeep. A headlamp shatters and burns. MacReady peeks out as Smith pulls back the lever of his Winchester rifle. Smith leans on his car hood and reaches into his pocket for more cartridges. He squints at the Jeep as he reloads. Crouched behind the Jeep's left front tire, MacReady quickly glances around, then ducks his head and looks under the car. Smith finishes loading the rifle. Eyes narrowed, he taps his fingers on the hood, then starts to creep backward, working his way along one side of the wood-paneled station wagon. MacReady waits, then darts forward on his knees and grabs an empty bottle from the dirt nearby. He drags himself back to cover. Up on the ledge, Smith steps around the wagon toward a group of boulders to the Jeep's left. On the ground, MacReady reaches back and takes the Jeep out of gear. Still on his knees, he hunches forward to crawl under the car. His fedora falls to the ground. MacReady gets down onto one side and squeezes under the chassis. He reaches up to unscrew a cap. Removing it, he places the empty bottle upright under the car. In the boulders, Smith inches toward a clear shot. MacReady props the bottle in the sand under the car, then pulls himself free. Sitting up, he reaches back to the ignition. Smith stops, looking down. Quickly, he heads further left. Under the car, dark purplish fluid spills from the fuel line into the bottle. MacReady grabs the half-filled bottle by the neck and pulls it toward him. He swirls it, then yanks off his necktie, using his teeth to unknot it. As Smith inches closer, MacReady rips the lining out of the tie, holding one end in his mouth, the other in his good hand. Glancing up toward the boulders, MacReady stuffs the long ribbon of material into the bottleneck. Capping it with his thumb, he tilts the makeshift Molotov cocktail back and forth. In the boulders, Smith cautiously starts to descend. MacReady flicks a lighter. Peering into the darkness, he lights the end of the cocktail, then waits in a crouch, gripping the bottle's neck. The flame grows wilder. MacReady glances between it and a boulder just in front of him. Smith peeks around the boulder. MacReady tenses. As Smith steps out into the open, MacReady stands and heaves the bottle toward him. It explodes, dousing Smith in flames. He writhes on the ground, beating at the flames. MacReady rushes forward. He kicks sand onto Smith's legs, then stops, looking down at him. As Smith quiets, MacReady gets the rifle. Daytime. In town, someone points a rifle through the bars of the jail window as a car approaches. A few people step out of the bar and grill to stare. The car, Smith's station wagon, stops in front of the jail and the driver's door opens. Tim steps out of the jail, holding a rifle, shadowed by Doc. He stops as he recognizes MacReady, who wipes his brow.
Am I going to have trouble with you? Nope, but I sure thought the situation was going to be, like, reversed. I thought that I was going to have trouble with him.
He looks in the back of the car.
I'll take care of him.
As Doc helps Tim, MacReady goes inside. Dust covers the broad shoulders and back of his suit jacket. He looks around the jail, taking in the occupied cells. Pete watches sullenly from the desk.
Well, the gang's all here, all right.
Tim steps inside with Doc.
Thought I'd take one last whack at my job.
Your sister's out in the car, Pete. She's dead.
Pete starts toward him.
You want me to tell you who killed her?
I know who killed her.
He turns away and walks outside. Later, a small crowd stands on the town's road as Doc walks MacReady to the depot.
About that medal, can we have it?
We have it. Who's we?
We, us.
He motions to the town behind them.
Why?
MacReady steps onto the platform.
Oh, yes, maybe we need it. Maybe give us something to build on.
This town's wrecked. Just as old as bombed out. Maybe it can come back.
Some towns do and some towns don't. Depends on the people.
They both look across the tracks where police cars wait outside the jail. Pete walks in handcuffs to an unmarked car. He glances at them, then gets in. The train approaches down the tracks. Its long, sleek form pulls alongside the tiny depot. MacCready watches over his shoulder as it slows.
That metal would help.
MacCready takes the case from his breast pocket and hands it to Doc.
Thanks, Mr. MacCready. Thanks for everything.
MacCready offers his hand and Doc shakes it. MacCready picks up his suitcase. The conductor approaches.
What's all the excitement? What happened?
A shooting.
Thought it was something. First time the streamliner stopped here in 4 years.
Second time.
He boards. The train pulls away. Words appear. The end. Bad Day at Black Rock, made in Hollywood, USA by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Cast: Spencer Tracy as John J. MacCready, Robert Ryan as Reno Smith, Anne Francis as Liz Worth, Dean Jagger as Tim Horn, Walter Brennan as Doc Feely, John Erickson as Pete Worth, Ernest Borgnine as Coley Trimble, Lee Marvin as Hector David, Russell Collins as Mr. Hastings, and Walter Sand as Sam. Fade to black.